This is the No Dabba Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this evening I'm joined by Cliff Aegis, software developer and pilot of the 787 Dreamliner for a major British airline. Thank you very much for taking time out of your evening, Cliff.
You're welcome. It's good to join you.
So to start, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
As you say, my name's Cliff Aegis, and I fly 787s around the world. So I'm currently sitting in San Jose in California. Is it last week I was in Boston?
You were in Boston last week.
Yeah. So I get around the world. I'm off to the Middle East next week. I get around quite a bit. And when I'm not flying a 787, I write code, do a bit of IoT work, electronics, just keep myself busy, like learning new things. So,
what are your languages of choice?
Languages of choice: C sharp. I like .NET. And then for things like IoT, it drops down to C, and maybe the Arduino frameworks, same sorts of things. But I tend to try and stay in the .NET space because that's kind of where I feel comfortable.
How did you end up being both a pilot and a software developer?
I trained when I left school. I trained as an electromechanical engineer at Ford Motor Company. And there they taught me PLC programming, they taught me robotics, as well as electronics, electrical engineering and mechanical. I worked in the industry for 11 years, decided to then move on to being a pilot. So I trained as a pilot. And then I found myself sitting in a hotel at 2 o'clock in the morning with, jet lag, wide awake, wondering what I'm going to do with myself, for hours before, the canteen open for breakfast. So picked up the software again, opened my laptop and started looking around. And started, so I started out just doing kind of websites and basic things. And then moved on to kind of learning .NET and C#, and the rest is history.
When you started flying, I presume you didn't start with a 787. Did you start with something smaller?
Yeah, you start with a little single engine propeller aircraft, a little Cessna 152 is what I started in, flying at local airfields in northeast London. And so it sort of started out there. I then came across the States. I went to Tulsa and did my hours building and finished off my flight training there, and went back to the UK, did all the ground exams, and then joined an Irish airline and worked for them for 2 years, doing regional Ireland and into the UK. And then went on to the airline I'm with now and started off on smaller aircraft and moved up to 787.
I came across your presentation when I was at NDC London in January, and you were presenting on critical decision making and the processes that go into that. So could you give us maybe an introduction to what that means?
I went along to some .NET meetups in London last year. And just started talking to people, mentioned about the fact that my day job is flying planes around the world, but my other day job is coding and writing software. And I was asked, what are the skills, how do you make your decisions? We start talking about things. And then I was kind of prompted by Dylan Beatty, actually, who's said, how about you come along and give a talk at the meetup about, how you make critical decisions on the flight deck, and when something goes wrong, how do you deal with it? How do you, get the team together and make sure that the situation is dealt with, not only quickly and correctly, but, in a means that brings the whole team together. So I went along to give a talk at the meetup, went along to Prognet last year as well at Skills Matters, and then it moved on to NDC London. There's other talks and that around the world that I'm going to start going to kind of spread the word, really.
Because when you're at something like NDC or any of the tech conferences, something that says pilot decision making stands out.
It does, yeah. Lots of people come and talk to you, which is great, because it's going along and being a speaker at a conference, I think, is awesome, because it means that it takes away that barrier of meeting people, because people come up to you and start talking to you. You haven't got to go and find them. They come and start talking to you. So it's a great way of meeting people you wouldn't normally talk to. The talk seems to, lots of people come and speak to me afterwards. I've had quite a few people tweet me after NDC London and said that, I think it was Troy Hunt was giving a talk in the other room. So lots of people went to his talk instead of mine. And then they've watched it on kind of Vimeo or YouTube afterwards and said, that was awesome. And where are you giving the talk next? I'd love to come along. So
yeah, he's tough competition to be up against.
He was a bit. Yeah, he was a bit. But there you go.
Yeah, the room had a large crowd, and then we had the interactive session at the end, but I'm going to wind back a little bit. So what do you mean by critical decision making?
When you think about a job as an airline pilot, if something were to go wrong, you have the all the computers that are making trillions of decisions every second. On the 787, I went and spoke to our engineering team and said, how many computers on board the aircraft? And first thing they said, we'll define a computer. And I said, well, something that has its own code, something that runs its own code. And we sat and we worked through kind of some of the drawings and looked at how many computers there are, how many computers in our common core system, et cetera, et cetera. And we come to a nice round figure of thousands, give or take a bit, that are running their own kind of code. And we said, that's a lot of decisions, all them processors sitting there making these decisions, trillion decisions a second. But when something goes wrong with the aircraft, the part that makes the ultimate decision is the fleshy bits at the front. Myself and the captain I'm sitting next to make the decision as to what we're going to do with this situation, how we're going to handle this situation. And you may have a few seconds to make a decision. Think of Chelsea Sullenberger, the Airbus A320 that went into the Hudson. Think of the 038 incident, the aircraft, the 777 that crashed at London Heathrow. Both of them are about 10 years ago now. Think of the Airbus A340 that went into the ocean just north of Brazil. So you've got seconds to make a decision, maybe. Other times you'll have a lot longer. Maybe you'll have 5, 10, 15 minutes, or you may have a couple of hours because you take off, you have a failure, and it's 6, 7, 8 hours before you land at destination. But the problem isn't going to be a problem until you get to destination. Maybe it's something with your landing gear. It didn't come up quite correctly. Well, you can carry on the flight, but when you put it down, is it going to go down? Is it not going to go down? So you've got plenty of time to deal with the situation. So it's coming up with a framework that means you can deal with that situation, and it just works no matter what the situation is.
So then you get training on that, but you also, as I say, present on this. And then you in your presentation, you talk about the different decision-making types that are there. So could you go through those?
Yeah, we do. We do get training. As a pilot, we have to go in the simulator every 6 months to prove our skill to the training team to make sure that we can keep our license. So every 6 months, I hand over my license to the trainer, to the examiner, and hopefully 2 days later, I've passed the tests and give my license back. On top of that, we go and have once a year, we do all the same things that cabin crew do for making sure we know how to open the door in an emergency, that sort of thing. And we go and see a doctor to make sure that we're fit and healthy. So we're constantly trained, constantly checked. And in between all of that, we have monthly documents that come out and tell us, this happened last week on this flight with this airline. This is, what could have been done to resolve that situation. So we're bombarded with training. It's train, and then train some more. But so the decision-making types, you have a brilliant book by Professor Steve Peters, The Chimp Paradox. And our training team brought this into our training a few years ago. And the idea being about how a human reacts to, or us as humans react to cognitive input. So something happens, how do you react? And we have, or the way Professor Steve Peters puts it, you have two reactions. You have a chimp reaction, and that is kind of, the kind of the fight or flight, kind of caveman-esque kind of reaction. And you also have the human reaction, which is the slow, methodical, kind of think it through and then come up with an answer. Problem is the input that comes in goes to chimp first. So the chimp can react and, make this kind of impulsive decision, this impulsive reaction. And then it goes to the human, and the human is a bit slower. So you have to kind of train yourself and train your chimp to not react. And that may sound a bit crazy and weird, but the idea is that if something happens, don't just jump straight into solution. Sit in your hands, wind your watch, take a deep breath, try and make some time to think the decision through, get the human involved.
Does that apply? I mean, there must be times when that doesn't apply. You're skidding on the ice or something and you're driving. You don't time.
Yeah, there is times when that happens. We have what we call kind of rule-based decisions, which is where kind of the chimp wants to react. You haven't got time for the humans to jump in. And the rule base is where it's a if this, then that. So these are things that we've trained in the simulator. So if you imagine an aircraft gets airborne, you have an engine failure, Well, that's something we train every time we go into the simulator. We know how to do it. I could do it blindfolded, hands tied behind my back. It's something we do. It's bread and butter work for us. So that means that I don't need to work to think it through. I don't need the human response. I can calm my chimp down because I've trained my chimp, and my chimp now knows that, I can feed it a banana. It's not going to rattle its cage. It's going to be quite happy because it's seen this situation hundreds of times before. So it's nice, relaxed, calm. We go through the procedure, go through the process. We get to a certain stage where, the gear's up, we declare the Mayday to air traffic control. That's when we can then, because the chimp's now calm, because it's seen this loads of times, it's, quite happy, gone to sleep maybe. The human can now sit and think through the situation and calmly, methodically decide, well, the engine's fouled. We would have briefed on the grounds what we're doing in the case of an engine failure and departure. And then we would then move on to what we briefed and how we go about resolving the situation, maybe going back to land at the airport we just took off of. I'm here in San Jose, and I don't know if you know the airport here, but it's quite small. So, when I depart to fly home tomorrow night, we'll probably brief the fact that if we have an engine failure, we're not going to come back to San Jose because the runway is too small to land single engine. And with failures that were, potential secondary failures. So we might talk about maybe going on to San Francisco or to Oakland, which is just across the bay, and landing there. They're the options we start to generate on the ground, start to think through. This is before we even, this would be on the bus going to the airport. So this wouldn't even be anywhere near the aircraft. So these are the sorts of things we start to kind of pre-train the chimp and talk through the situation and think through the problems before they actually happen. Because you don't want to get to the point where it goes pop, bang, whiz, and you haven't got an idea of what you're going to do. Because that's when the chimp jumps in and you start to get, things going wrong.
So it's a combination of the repetition of training in the simulator combined with some contextual stuff, like you said there, San Jose is too small, San Francisco is better, etc.
Yeah, and this is where, I start to bring this into the software side as well, because if I look at a problem, I won't jump straight into the problems. Oh, we could solve this by using this framework and that framework. Can we do it with this, these tools we got here? And I'll sit down, step back, generate some time, go for a walk with the dogs and think through the problem and start to think through, what could we do? How can we do it? And start to think. And then I like to go back with lots and lots of questions about, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And trying to kind of pull out exactly how it needs to work. And, if this fails, how are we going to resolve this? So trying to bring some of what I do in my day-to-day job as a pilot into the software side as well. So, and that's what I try and talk through in my talk when I give it a conference.
Yeah, I found myself that also when you've come up with a solution for something, it can be very, very hard to get away from it. So if you've come up with an answer very quickly, everything you do will be based on that. And it might not have been well thought through. It might be something as simple as using the wrong type of enumerator or the wrong type of collection. But I've used a dictionary, I'm sticking with it now, as opposed to I'm going to consider a hash or I'm going to consider something.
Yeah. And that's one of the tool that I talk about in my talk, this TDODAR, which is our framework. It's our version. We all like frameworks, don't we? It's the next JavaScript framework's coming along. It's a tool that we use to base our decision around. So that if we do have a short amount of time, we've got a nice tool that all the crew know, not just us as flight crew, but the cabin crew know this tool as well. The fact that, we know as a standard operating procedure, we know what we're going to do. I mean, the capsule I've come out on this flight with to San Jose, I've met him before. I've never flown with him before. So, it's the first time we've sat next to each other, coming halfway around the world. Yet we both know what the procedures are. If something's to go wrong, how we'd follow those procedures. If we do need to, talk about how we're going to resolve the situation, we both know the framework and how we'd kind of go through the framework and resolve the situation. So, training is everything.
But before we will talk about TDODAR at length, but before that, in your presentation, you talk about a number of daily decisions that you face and how to categorize them, whether they're sort of the chimp or the human or the rule. So just as sort of a way of giving the listener an example of what you did in the presentation, you're going to present me a few of the daily decisions that I'm going to try to guess or remember what type of decision-making process comes in.
Yeah, so no cheating. I know you've been to the talk.
Yeah, but I I kind of
so just for listeners, so you got the chimp response, which is your kind of naturalistic fight or flight, big bang, you jump, your colleague just tells you something, which is, you know, you thought you'd fixed last week and you get really angry about it, you jump out, that sort of thing. The human is the slow, methodical, got plenty of time, I'm going to think this through and come up with an answer or a list of answers and then pick the best one. And you've got the rule base, which is the bit where you've trained to think about, I'm just trying to think of an example now. You're driving your car, you know, and the revs are starting to get high. So you put the clutch down, you move the gear stick, you lift the clutch, you do it without thinking. It's just, it's rule based. You know what to do. So they're the three kind of models that we can use in our daily decision making. So in my talk, I come up with five that I can ask the audience in the talk. And today I'm going to ask you, obviously. But imagine, you know, you're flying along quite happily. We was climbing out of Toronto and went into a patch of clouds. You know, it's been a lovely day all day in Toronto. And suddenly, bang, you get struck by lightning. What do you think that response would be?
Are you asking me what I think I would like to respond or how I probably would respond?
How do you think me that, you know, I've been struck by lightning quite a few times now on an aircraft. It's part and parcel of the job.
Sure. All right. I've never been struck by lightning, so I'm probably going to have the chimp response.
The chimp response. Yeah, that's pretty much what I had. The lightning bolt hit just about a foot away from my backside to the right-hand side of the aircraft. And yeah, a big bright flash and a big noise. I jumped in my seat, even though I'm wearing a 5-point safety harness. The captain burst into fits of laughter because he thought it was hilarious. But it's, you know, I've been struck by lightning quite a few times. It's one of those things. But yeah, the chimp response jumps in. But then the training kicks in and says, right, okay, calm down, take a deep breath, sit in your hands, take a moment. Right, okay, we've been struck by lightning. Now what? Okay, the aircraft's still flying. The autopilot's still engaged. We're still stable. Everything's looking good. All the engine temperatures and pressures are good. We're okay. Okay, let's slow it down and start thinking through. So that's, I've gone from a chimp response to the checking the aircraft is flying and it's okay, which is the rule-based response. Then I move on to the human part, which is, okay, what could be happening now? And then you start thinking about things like passengers. Well, they would have heard it. So you go through this whole kind of process of the responses. You know, you'll start out maybe with a chimp, but you kind of try not to respond to that one. So another one that happens was getting to the top of climb and engine surge. So the engine goes bang and the aircraft kind of waddles around in the sky. And at the time, I just kind of sitting there eating my breakfast. It was an early departure out of London. And so a fork full of sausage in my mouth. And yeah, the aircraft starts wobbling around all over the sky. So what do you think the response would be there?
I'll go with a rule, I hope.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was actually initially at that time there was a little bit of a chimp response. It's like, okay, I'm eating my breakfast. Come on, give me a break. Oh, sure. Here. Okay. I'm hungry. That was you know, it's a little bit of, oh no, come on, give me a break.
Should give me a hint, you're eating a banana, then I'd have got it.
Yeah. So then it was rule based, so you know, sort of put the food away and look at the situation. There were some procedures we have to go through, some memory drills that we have to follow to make sure we secure the aircraft, you know, make sure the engine's okay. Once that's sorted, then we go into the TDODAR process of managing the situation, managing the aircraft and deciding what we're going to do, where we're going to go. You know, do we need to land immediately? Can we go on elsewhere, etc. So, next one I talk about in my presentation is, you're pushing back off stands. You know, you've moved maybe 15, 20 feet. And you get a bing bong from the cabin crew. Not normal. You know, normally they're busy doing the safety demonstration. And they say to you, Captain, we've got a passenger at the back of the aircraft that's unwell. And we think they're giving heart massage. That's all I know at the moment. I'll tell you some more in a moment. I'm just going to go and find out. What do you think the response to that would be?
I would assume a rule again, just because it's a medical thing and the liability involved and the need to get paramedics on board.
You could say rule based. There's not kind of a written down as such rule for that, so it's more of a human response. Okay. Is how we're going to manage this. So you know, initially we started by getting the ground guys to stop pushing the aircraft, and then we because we don't have enough information to decide whether we need to get a paramedic, because it could just be the fact that they're, you know, it could be something totally unrelated. It could be a security incident and the cabin crew kind of trying to subdue this passenger as opposed to, you know, heart massage. You know, you look the length of an aircraft, it could be, you know, one situation being taken as another. So you kind of have to wait for a bit more input from the crew. But while you're waiting, you can start thinking of the options. Okay, if we do need to get a paramedic, how are we going to do that? We'll have to go back on stand. We'll have to get air traffic controllers to call an ambulance because, you know, our mobile phones are turned off. So it's kind of going through them, you know, starting to think the human response and cognitive, going through all the decisions. So when you do get more input, you can decide how to use that input. We've already decided what we're going to do.
I think I might be thinking of rule in the wrong way. So are you saying rules are more a quick way of responding that's been thought out before because you've done it in training and you do it instead of the chimp response, but it's not as, let's say, thoughtful as the human response?
Yeah, basically. Okay. So a rule-based is there's a checklist.
Yeah.
Someone's sat in a room, thought out, if you see this, then you do that.
Or it's like the gear change, as you said, the manual gear change. It becomes a natural thing you do because you've done it a million times before, as opposed to I need to change the gear because of the whatever. Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's a you know, the engineers, the lawyers and all the other people sat in a room and come up with a checklist, and this is what your response will be if you see this situation happen. And the human is you have to sit there and think it through and come up with the options and decide, etc. So the next one I talk about is flying back towards London, and was it back to London? No, it's across to Italy actually, and the airport was closed due to snow. So, you know, what are you going to do?
I'm going to go with a human response. Kind of think about it, stop, make a few calls.
Yeah, who are you going to call?
I would call air traffic control somewhere, find out what's nearby, what airports are open, capacity, stuff like that.
Yeah, you're starting to get there, yeah.
And then how to get people from there to their destination?
Yeah, I mean, we'd call back to what we delicately call MUM, which is operations back at London, and say, what would you like us to do? We can't get into our destination. Where would you like us to go? And give them the option to think, because they will then have...
take over for you.
Well, they won't take over, because ultimately we're in control of the aircraft.
Sorry,
so
I mean making it... Yeah. Suggesting an airport for you, I suppose.
Yeah, the reason we ask them is because they've got a rule based for if you divert from that airfield, we'd like you to go there because it may be further on the map, but the coaches are easier to get from point A to point B for the passengers, or you can refuel and go. You know, there's other reasons that they have but you know, we don't have those in the flight deck because we go to hundreds of destinations each year. So, and then last one, which is the one that I use in the exercise right at the very end, which is always good fun. You depart in early hours in the morning out of Helsinki and the baggage system fails. You know, what would your response be then?
I'd go with human again, I imagine. Just find out how bad it is. Go from there.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. So, as I say, during my talk, I use that as an exercise right at the very end, get everyone broken down into teams, break down some barriers. I quite often see software teams. It's quite a, you know, introvert industry, isn't it? So getting people to sit and chat to others around them and make new friends and have a bit of fun at the end with some passenger addresses to the passengers, which is quite funny. It's quite funny what people would say to passengers, and then you get them to stop and think about it. So maybe I shouldn't have said that. Maybe I should have said this. So it's good fun.
Yeah, I think the when I did the exercise with you, and not just my group, but all of the groups, we all failed with giving too much information to the passengers, because I think in software we're trained, or not even trained, sorry, the wrong word, but we're used to giving a lot of feedback to the business users or the product owners, telling them there's a problem, telling them what the problem is, what the possible consequences are. Whereas in your example, you don't necessarily want to worry passengers unnecessarily, and they're not going to complain too much that they didn't know about something. Whereas a business user will complain that you didn't keep them up to date.
Yeah, and that's what comes back to like when we said a few moments ago, that the chimp response is you're not just thinking about the chimp response in you, you're thinking about the chimp response in the user. So when you're going back to the business and you're saying to them that we've not managed to get this done in time, or you know, what we thought would happen with this kind of input into the software would give this output, whatever it is that you're trying to manage, if you go to them and tell them too early when you don't have a solution, you're going to incite the chimp in the business user. And that's when it starts to get, well, we need this done by yesterday, and you need to have, you know, you need to go and get it sorted. And then you go rushing back to your desk, and your inner chimp is now getting a bit kind of rattling in the cage. So you start crashing away at the code and make rash decisions because you're trying to rush and get it fixed because you've now got managers calling you. So the reason why we wouldn't give all the information at the passage isn't because we're holding it from them and we're thinking, you know, we don't want you to know, is because it buys us time to then think about, well, how are we going to pass on this sensitive information about the fact their bags may not be on board in a way that's going to upset them. And, you know, we bought time on this occasion and during the exercise by kind of getting airborne, finding out whose bags weren't on board and just telling those passengers. So the rest of the passengers didn't know the fact that this situation happens. But the, you know, 20 or so passengers it happened to on that day, because something that was completely outside of our control, completely outside the airline's control, it was the airport's baggage system that fouled. You know, that was something that kind of managed to contain. And in the end, it actually worked out for the passengers because they got their bags delivered to their destination without having to lug it on the London Underground across London. So they were over the moon. It's managing the chimp response, not just in you and the team you're working in, but in those you give the information to. So, and make sure that you don't incite it.
You've mentioned TDODAR a few times. So it's the letter T, DODAR. So let's go through that now. What's it all about?
Well, TDODAR is our framework. It's what we kind of hang our hat on. It's what we use to manage situations, be it from, you know, any of the ones I just talked about, from medical emergencies to an engine failure to, you know, baggage system failure, etc. So you've got T, which stands for time. And you've got D, which stands for diagnosis. O is for options. The next D is for decision. A is for assign. And a really, really important one, which is massive, right at the very end, bit that every team seems to forget, is review. And, you know, we get beasted on this in the simulators and in any training that we do is review. And then if you haven't done it yet, review again. And that is where you make your, you know, when you review the situation is you go back through. So a review isn't say, yeah, we've done it, it's all okay. It's go back to the beginning again and go back through. Have we still got a bit more time? You know, was the diagnosis correct? Did we make, you know, is there any new options to us? Have we made the correct decision? You know, did we assign the correct tasks to the correct people in the team? Review again, go back to the beginning, and we just go round and round in the circle.
So when you're you're saying time, though, what do you mean time? Time just means what? Look at my watch. What do I do?
Well, for us, when we have a situation, something that happens, one of the ways we teach to control the situation and control your inner chimp is to start a clock. Because just that mere action of reaching up your hand and pressing the chrono switch on the flight deck, the 787, or, you know, starting the clock in a meeting room when you're sitting down to deal with a situation, you know, noting down what time the meeting started, that small thing is enough to control the chimp. Yeah, it's something, it's a cognitive thought process. I'm going to check what time it is. Then it's how much time do we have? You know, do we have lots of time? You know, is this something we have to do quickly? Is this something we need? Is there a rule that fits its situation? Maybe it's an engine failure, or you take off and you go straight into a wind shear, or, you know, there's another aircraft in the way and you have to do a TCAS, which is a traffic collision avoidance system. One of the kind of emergency maneuvers or emergency situations where there's a rule that fits that situation. Or do we have lots of time, in which case, you know, you can, you know, engage a human and go through the whole process in slow time. And one of the ways I was told by a trainer many years ago, which I think is absolutely excellent, you know, T also stands for a cup of tea. If you've got time to get a cup of tea, yeah, you've got time to take it nice and slow, be methodical, and go through it nice and slowly. But equally, you don't want the time to be, well, okay, we've got 2 weeks to finish this project. We've got 2 weeks to sit back and relax and take it easy and go through this nice and slow. Try and keep it to a nice, short, kind of, you know, 15, 20 minutes, go through the process, come up with a decision, and then go off and do some work. Because the mere fact of going to do something towards this project will change the decisions and the options that are available to you. And then also, equally importantly, the T stands for team. So you need to make sure it's a team exercise. There's no managers in the room. There might be. The hierarchy of your team may have managers and supervisors and team leaders in the room. But when you're going through this process, there is no manager. They don't exist yet. It's a team effort. You all do it together. You all got equal voice, including the quiet person that's sitting in the back of the room. So that's what the T stands for in T-DoDa. Then we move on to the D, which is diagnosis. So discuss the symptoms. Yeah, not how you're going to fix them, just what the symptoms are. What is it you're trying to fix? Open questions are the best way to resolve that. So asking an open question of somebody, you know, what do you think happens? You know, oh, I think the engine's failed. Why do you think the engine's failed? You know, oh, because of, you know, the engine gauge here is, you know, the exhaust gas temperatures are through the roof, and the M1 gauge, which is the speed of the engine, is almost stopped. Okay, well, why do you think it couldn't be, you know, electrical failure or hydraulic failure? Or, you know, so asking questions and then asking for proof of why it couldn't be something else, you know, will help you through the diagnosis. And that could be any member of the team. It could be, you know, as I say, it could be a manager in the room. But I seem to find when I work in teams doing this, if you get the questions coming from those that are more junior in the team, asking those that are more senior, it helps, A, with their training, but also it helps because they will ask things that you with experience, because you've been doing the job a lot longer, wouldn't ask because you have the experience yourself. It's not going to be that because, you know, I've seen that hundreds of times. It's not that. But a junior person may ask a question in a different way. So they'll get you to stop and think a lot more, which means you then have to come back with a smarter answer. And then, you know, obviously the clock is ticking, the T is still ticking away. And the team, as a team, make a decision on what needs to be tackled. What is it we're trying to fix here today? And this isn't, again, this isn't the manager, the supervisor, or the team leader in the room that says, right, we're going to fix this. It's a team decision. And the idea behind that is we obviously have a captain on board that is, you know, legally responsible for the aircraft and all the passengers on board and the airframe and et cetera, et cetera. But if you get one person to make the decision as to what we're going to fix, what the diagnosis is, the rest of the team may all believe that it's something else completely separate from what the team leaders are picking. And that means that they won't be with, you know, the team's broken apart then. They won't be with the team leader in making the, you know, the rest of the options and diagnosis and making sure the situation is found. So if you make decisions as a team, you know, show of hands, you know, whatever it is that works for you on the day is to, you know, we all think it should be this that gets fixed. Okay. And then the team leader just needs to, you know, either come up with a reason why they think it shouldn't be that we fix, we need to fix this over here, and come up with a really good response and get the team on side, or go with the majority in the team. Because otherwise it all starts to fall apart. So that's, and obviously the clock is always ticking. So you need to make sure that, you know, someone keeps an eye on the time, someone keeps an eye on the clock. Yeah. Have you ever seen them? I got shown a website recently, which I thought was very funny. It was expensive meeting calculator.
Nope.
And it was my wife that pointed it out to me because she, you know, she works in accounts and she, in these meetings day in, day out for hours and hours on end. And it got shown to her, and it basically, you put in number of people in the room, the average wage of the people in the room, it tells you how much that meeting costs. And she used it for a few of her meetings and showed her boss, but it's quite shocking the amount of time you can spend in a meeting room, and, you know, time that gets used, and obviously company money, in just going to hundreds of meetings and not actually getting any work done. So the important bit is make it, you know, the time, the clock is ticking, keep it short, make a decision, and then move on.
But you have to assign it too. Isn't that a big deal with this, that there's someone who has to do something and follow up?
Well, we haven't quite got to that yet.
Oh, I'm
So at the
sorry.
moment, all we've done is the T. The D is diagnosed, so we've picked what is wrong.
Oh,
what
I'm
we
sorry.
Need to
I'm
fix.
sorry. I thought we had a decision. I miss. I
No, no, no,
misunderstood.
no. I think it's because I said the word decision.
Sure.
So what you need to fix. Yeah. So in our case today, the left engine's gone bang and there's flames pouring out the back and we need to fix that.
It's definitely that's a bit of a giveaway.
Well, yeah, yes, but you know, you need to make sure. You know, one of the ways you say it's a dead giveaway, but in the flight deck, you know, you may not notice flames licking out the engine.
Yeah.
You can't see. I can look out the window, I can crane my neck, but I can't see the tip of the wing, let alone the engine. So that'd be where you know, to help with your decision, you might ask the cabin crew, bring them on board. You know, you might hear the screams from the passengers. You know, wherever it is. But these are sorts of things you feed in. It is, but these are sorts of things you need to feed into your decision making process. But you say reassuring thought, but you know, at the end of the day, that's why we get trained to such a degree to do what we do. Because you know, you've got 220 people sitting behind you. You need to make the right decision. So that's why we have these frameworks. So we've done the T, which is time, done the first D, which is diagnosed. We've decided what we're going to fix. Next bit is options. And this is the bit where most people know what to do. You just say to them, we're going to brainstorm this. And everyone knows what brainstorming is. You stand in front of a board, you write a long list of all the things that could possibly be done to fix the problem. Yeah? Would you agree with that?
Sure.
Yeah? And that is pretty much what we do. But obviously, we're not going to make a long list on the flight deck. We're not going to get bits of paper out. We haven't got a whiteboard sitting behind us with, you know, a bunch of coloured pens. So the way we do it is we'll say, give me another option. Give me another option. Give me another option. What else could we do? And we keep kind of feeding off each other as to give me another option. What can we do? Take input from other members. So like I said, ask the cabin crew, ask air traffic control, ask the ground engineering team, whoever it is that's around you. You know, it's a team effort, not just those that are involved in the here and now, what we're trying to fix, but those in the wider company. So just phone back and speak to, the company engineering teams, etc. In a software environment, it may be the fact that, you know, your team is working in a .NET space and you're trying to do something that's web-based. Go off and find someone within the company that's got them skills and bring them in, you know, maybe not into the meeting room, but quick call. Teleconference call to them and bring them in to say, you know, what would you do in this situation? What do you think are any other options you can think of that would help us out? And the really, really important part here is there's no such thing as a silly idea. And the reason being is that your silly idea that, you know, could be something crazy. Let's, you know, our option, we could shut down the right engine. You know, the left engine's on fire, but let's shut down the right one. You know, it's clearly a silly idea, but the silly ideas that you have and you voice could be the seed for somebody else's oak, massive, great idea that they're going to have that, yeah, let's shut down the left engine. Let's stop them flames, you know. So it's just voice everything. And the other important bit, and this is more for if you're the team leader or manager in the room and you're trying to ensure that your junior members of your team are kind of taking part in this, is you'll have those that are quite boisterous and, you know, they've been given this new kind of voice. You know, we're all one team. You can all speak up. You have some that will just speak up and take full advantage of this situation of, you know, telling the senior lead engineer that, you know, this is what I think we should do and getting in there, getting, you know, rolling up the sleeves and getting dirty with the situation. But you equally have the quiet person sitting in the back of the room. And it's those that tend to have, because they've been sitting there with the human response of sitting quietly, they've not been involved in the chat, they're sitting back relaxing, watching what's going on. Those tend to have the best ideas. Whenever I've done this in a software or an office environment, it's always the person sitting in the back of the room quietly that, you know, I'll reach out and say, what do you think, and just get them to come in with a response, and they tend to come in and give an awesome idea, or at least one that moves the situation along somewhat. And again, really important, you know, although it's a brainstorming exercise, the T, the time, the clock is still ticking. So just keep thinking about it. Keep moving along. Don't take too long over it. Just generate lots and lots of options, but just keep it short and sweet. Maybe give yourself a time for this section. You know, if you're in a, you know, for us on the flight deck, you know, the time is kind of, you know, pretty easy to work out. But in an office environment, you know, you need to maybe say, right, we're going to allocate 10 minutes alone just to this option generation, because we've said we've got a couple of days for this project, but we're just going to give 10 minutes to this. What are we going to do? Then, this is the bit you was talking about, then we move on to the diagnosis, which is the second D.
Decision.
And that's where, decision, not diagnosis. So the decision, what you're going to do. And again, this is where you decide as a team. And this, like I said earlier, if the team leader, the senior engineer, you know, the lead, the project lead, whoever it is, the business, the, you know, person that's in the room that's saying, I want this, I want this, I want this. You know, if you decide as a team, you'll get everybody on board. Everyone has a bit of personal ownership in the project and the decision. So you will get much better response. If you dictate to the team, we're doing this, and you don't give a valid, good reason, the team are going to go back to their desks with their assigned tasks, and they're going to sit down a bit grumpy, you know, and not do what the assigned task is, or not do it as well. You know, they might start, you know, I don't know, you know, doing something unrelated, or think about, you know, actually, I'm going to look at what I thought I might do anyway, rather than do the assigned task. So decide the team. Again, if there's a valid reason that the senior lead or the business person has decided that actually we need, this is the decision that we need to make, they need to give a really, really good reason to the team to make them come along with them, make them have ownership of the decision as well, and bring them on board. Again, don't take long deciding this. I've seen teams in an office environment take a very long time, and you got to try and move it along. And the thing that happens is you see teams sit there and they go through all the options. It's like, well, we can not, you know, they're quite quick to cross off quite a few, and then they end up with two or three left. And even any of them could kind of solve the situation. And they're arm and arm about what they're going to do. Pick one. Doesn't matter which one, just pick one. And the reason is, you know, failure to decide is decide to fail. You need to just pick a decision. Yeah, if you don't pick one, you've already failed. You know, the clock will run out and time's up. You know, situation's got really, really bad now. So just pick one, go with it, and state the decision. Make sure everyone in the team, right, this is the decision we've made. This is why we've made it. This is our team decisions. Everyone happy? Yes, shove hands. Excellent. Then what will happen is, as you go on and start to go down, you know, we decided to shut down the left engine, turn off the fuel valves, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Go down that process. As soon as you start going down that process, things change. The situation is dynamic. It will start to change. And then that means that when you review at the end, with your review, and you come back and go around again in a few minutes' time, that's when you'll start to notice that actually the diagnosis may not have been quite right. And actually, we've got a few more options now. So actually, the decision may change. Yeah. And I know I've seen it so many times where people are scared to change their decision. Mm. Yeah. We're all human. We're all fallible. Stand up. Change your mind. You know, actually, guys, I think we've done this wrong. Let's change your mind. You know, we've gone down and picked the wrong frameworks from the many kind of frameworks we could have used for this project. Or we've picked the wrong tool set. Or we've picked a, like, you know, you said earlier, picked an enum or a dictionary when we should have used something else. That's your time to change. That's your time to step back. Right, okay, well, let's, you know, we picked the wrong thing. Let's change it. The other option was, what was the other one we liked on the board? Okay, it was that one. Let's give that a try and see if that kind of remedies the situation and gets us into that warm, fuzzy feeling. Actually, we've got this under control. So as I say, the important bits about decide, make a decision, make sure it's a team decision, state decision so everyone in the team knows what it is, and failure to decide is decide to fail. So just make sure it's a decision that you make, and clock is still ticking. So keep an eye on the clock, keep an eye on the stopwatch. Then we move on to the A. So we've done T for time, D for diagnose, O for options, D for decide, A for assign. That's when all the members of the team get assigned a task. And this is the first time really that it's the job of the team leader, the senior engineer in the room. And the reason they get involved at that point is because they have an understanding of who has what skill sets, who can accomplish the task, who it may be a bit of a stretch for, you know, who's got experience in which areas. So that's where kind of team leaders start to say, okay, you do this, you do this, you do this. An important part for them is to make sure that the tasks are short and then within the skill set. So don't give them this massive long task, like, right? You go and build out the database. Well, okay. Build it out. How? What do I need to do? And they're going to start coming back with loads and loads of questions, which then means other members of the team start a massive discussion about how we're going to build out the database, for example. Just give them a short, go and stand up a database and get it ready, get the connection string sorted, and then come back and hopefully we'll decide what we need from other team members then is what we need to have in the database. Just small little snippets needs to be done, because you're going to keep going round and round in this circle when you review as well. It's not a race, so don't rush off with your assigned task and crash it out and get it done as quickly as you possibly can, because that's when you'll make a mistake. Mistakes could come back and haunt you later in the project or later in the flight. So just nice, calm, methodically go through and do what needs to be done. If you can't complete your task because you don't have the information, that's when you go and ask the team. And if you're stuck because, it's outside your skill set, you've bitten off a bit more you can chew, put your hand up. Guys, I'm a bit lost here. Can someone help me out? Don't be afraid to ask for help. We're all human, we're all fallible, we all make mistakes, and we can't know everything. So, stand up and, say, you could go along. It's a bit like going along to Stack Overflow, isn't it? We all do it, get stuck, you go along Stack Overflow, ask a question and post it off. But the person sitting two or three seats away from you may know the answer, so ask them as well. And the important part of the team leader as well is to consider overload, making sure that you're kind of the people that have been assigned these tasks are not syncing with the workload. In an office environment, it could be the fact that, they haven't gone for lunch and they're sitting there still, or they're still there at 8 o'clock at night sending emails out, or you're seeing, the fact that they're pushing codes into repositories like, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. They're starting to get overloaded, so maybe take some of the work back off them and assign it elsewhere, because otherwise they're just going to burn out, or they're going to make wrong decisions because they're tired and they're starting to, get too engrossed in the project. So that's this sign. As I say, it's the team leaders kind of that tends to lead that, assign the tasks, and then everyone goes away and starts working on what needs to be done. And as I say, the really important bit at the end is the review. And this is the bit that tends to get forgotten. And it's the most important part of the whole TDODR process. So, you'd start off, do we still have time? Actually, we've still got 10 minutes left. We said we're going to give ourselves an hour. We've still got 10 minutes left. Or actually, we've still got, 10 minutes to landing because, we're so far away from the airport we decided to land at. Okay, well, what can we do in that 10 minutes? Is there kind of, was the diagnosis correct? Did we pick the right thing? Is there any more options that we could come up with? Is there any more kind of decisions that can be made or more work to be done to make the situation, better for us? So you quickly go back around the TDODR, and that could be you as an individual where you're just sitting there quietly waiting for the next task or waiting for something else to happen, or get back in a quick meeting by the coffee machine, quick stand up and go quickly back through the TDODR. It doesn't need to mean go back in the meeting room and book it out for another hour. It's just a quick, very, very quick, succinct. Have we made the right decision? Is it still a good decision? And this is the point where, as I say on my slides and things, don't be scared to change your mind. Don't be scared to go back and say, actually, guys, we have made a complete mess of this. We've picked the wrong thing. We shut down the wrong engine, or we turned off the electrics and we shouldn't have done. Whatever it is, this is the time to make the change and, admit that you're human, admit you're fallible, and go back and pick something different from the list of tasks. Or it could be that you've done something and it's generated a different problem, which is more serious, or it's started to resolve the issue, but not quite enough for what you need for the project on the day. So as I say, review, and if you haven't got the hint yet, review again is really important. And the bit that I often see that's missed, in what we do on the flight deck, because it's at the very end of the checklist, once we shut down the engines, or we finished whatever it is that we're doing, is review. and it's to review the whole flight. It's sit there and talk about how could you have done this better? How could I have done this better? And we're very, very open and self-critical, you know, of, you know, our team. You know, when we landed in San Jose the other night, you know, the flight went fine. There's nothing wrong at all. You know, it was a nice landing. It was a nice takeoff. Everything went really well. So we'll congratulate each other on job well done. But also, you know, oh, you know, that radio call you made halfway across Atlantic, you could have done that slightly differently and said this because that's what they're expecting. It would have saved, you know, the back and forth that we had. But you know what? Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. I did think about that and I wasn't sure. You know, whatever it is that kind of was could be improved, because that's how we learn. We learn from our mistakes more than we learn from our successes. So at the end of the project, once it's finished, take time to sit down before you rush into the next project, the next, you know, thing that's on the snag list or the bug list. Sit down and review what you've done, how you fixed it. Was it the right decision? You know, it may have been the wrong decision when you look back on it with 2020 vision, but you got the job done. But have you created a problem that will now kind of affect the next flight or affect the next? So review the situation. It's really important just to go back over what's been done. So that's pretty much what the T-DODO is. So you've got T for time, D for diagnose, O for options, D for decide, A for assign, and R for review. And as I say, I use this, if not every flight, then every other flight. And that's not because the left engine's on fire with flames pouring out the back, because you'd see that on BBC and Sky News and CNN and the likes. But it could be the smallest of things that's happened. And we use this process just to go through even a small nitty-gritty. I mean, I use it at home, you know, dealing with, you know, situations in the family. You know, dinner's getting burnt, that sort of thing. Well, how much time have I got before, you know, before I have to turn the football off to go and sort the dinner out for the kids? That sort of thing, you know. So you can use it in your home life as well as in your work life.
If people want to follow you, Twitter, websites, things like that?
Yeah, I don't have a blog. I don't have time. but they can find me on Twitter, at Clifford Ages. They can drop me an email, ping me an email, or direct message me. I'm quite happy to talk people through the process if they have more questions. Or,
and your presentations from NDC London have gone up on YouTube and Vimeo, so I'll put links into those into the blog post. Yeah. I'll put in your Twitter handle. Do you have a website or you don't have a website?
I don't have a website. It's kind of it's one of those things that's on the to-do list. I haven't quite got around to that one yet.
Any final notes before we wrap up for this evening, Cliff?
No, I mean, if you do get to see me on a talk, come along, say hello. I'm not scary.
Have you got a talk coming up soon?
Well, I'm hoping, as we talked about earlier, I'm hoping to come along to the Boston Code Camp. I've submitted for the other NDCs in Oslo and Sydney, but hopefully the Code Camp and some others maybe in London. Then I'm going to .NET Oxford, .NET Southeast, and there's a few others as well. Talks in the UK. Or meetups, yeah.
NDC Oslo is sometime in June. NDC Sydney is sometime in September, and I don't know the other ones.
Yeah, so I'm trying to get around. And the other thing that seems to come out of me giving these talks is lots of people want to know about how we deal with team skills. So I'm hoping for later this year to put another talk together on CRM skills, which is crew resource management, about how we manage teams and manage situations on the flight deck, because you can't have kind of the team breaking down because you're trying to fly a $250 million jet that weighs, you know, upwards 180 tons with 200 people sitting behind you. If your team breaks down, things go wrong very quickly. So that's another talk that may be coming along to conferences later this year. And the exercise at the end of my talk, everyone finds it funny. I find it hilarious to see people put into a flight deck of an aircraft in this kind of fake scenario. And you've obviously experienced it, so you can speak more of it than I can.
So. Well, Cliff Ages, thank you very much for your time this evening.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, you might also like episode 75 with David Mead, Start With Why and Better Communication, or episode 35 with John Sonmez on his book Soft Skills. The opening music was The Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Brand New World by Kai Engel from the album Sustains.